My name is Tom Wentz, and I'll be giving the presentation on my trip to East Africa. A couple things to make clear. In East Africa, I visited the countries of Kenya and Tanzania. When I speak, I will speak of both of them together. There's a lot of differences between the two countries, but for a group of people setting up in Washington or somewhere in the United States, we can just consider the two together. I spent 5.5 months in Kenya, 1.5 months in Tanzania. There is no apartheid in East Africa. It is a country, the countries are under black rule. Kenya, I think, got its independence in 1963 from Great Britain, and Tanzania in 1962. Since then, they've been black-ruled countries. There is problems, however. The difficulties, particularly in Kenya, and I don't see it so much in Tanzania, is intertribal battles. Kikuyu is the largest tribe in Kenya. They are the one that control almost all the government positions. Luo is the second biggest, and there's a lot of rivalry between those two. They have tried to solve some of that. So when Kenyatta died several years ago, they made David Moi president, who is from a tribe that is about the seventh or eighth biggest, because they knew they'd practically have a civil war if they took either Kikuyu or Luo. So they picked one from a lesser tribe, just as kind of an appeasing thing. He was also Kenyatta's vice president, so he wasn't a man who was unknown at the time. The languages, before, we didn't have any formal training. I learned a little bit of Swahili before we went over, like how to say hello and goodbye, and where's the bathroom, the usual stuff like that. When we got there, we went to Kenya first, and Kenya speaks as much English as they do Swahili. So we ended up speaking English all the time. When we would go from tribe to tribe, they would each have their own language. In Kenya, there's 42 different languages. So 1 week we're speaking Kiluo, and the next week we're speaking Kiluya, or Kikipsigi, or some other language. So we were never able to learn those languages. We tried to learn like the verse of Jesus Loves Me and a couple other very simple songs in the tribal languages. Also the greetings and thank yous in those. Otherwise, we just concentrate on Swahili. Once we got to Tanzania, everything is Swahili. They don't like to speak English. So once we got there, then we were forced into Swahili more. And by the time we left, after a month and a half there, we could speak Swahili. We did programs entirely in Swahili with no translators. We do introductions, songs, whatever. Oh, Tim arrived. Okay, we can go ahead. I've also done this. I spoke about Africa. I don't know. I've probably given 50 presentations, so you'd think this would be pretty polished. Well, every time I do different slides and I give different stories because I try and relate it to the audience I have. You look around at this audience and try and figure something relevant. So, but sometimes if it's children, like a school group or a church group or whatever, so there's a lot of different thing, and I usually tend to talk for a long time, but I'll try and let you off. But when you start leaving, I'll figure out that's enough. To start with, I'll try and give you a story that really struck me as a typical thing over there, or maybe the incident that says more about my whole experience than anything else. I saw a miracle. That's the way he started speaking. There was the 6 members of my team and probably 80 Africans stuck in this small room of maybe 20 feet by 20 feet. We were sitting at a table, and the old man of the village had stood up and started to speak. He spoke only his tribal language, so we had an interpreter. But the interpreter said, after the old man had spoken, "I saw a miracle today." And I tried to figure out what had happened during the day that would have been a miracle. And we had arrived in the morning. We had gone around and visited many of the families. We had had a large gathering in the afternoon, and we had sung some songs, but we did that every day. That wouldn't be a miracle. The sermon, I know, was not a miracle, because I had given it. And there was nothing that I could think of. But by then, the old man was starting to continue with his story. He said, I was a small boy when the first white man ever came into our area. I would see them, sometimes they'd drive by on the roads, but they'd go by very quickly and we'd hardly see them. Over the years, we had more and more contact, but they always lived up in their big houses and we worked in the fields. Or they would come in here and they would leave right away. We even had missionaries come and they would speak at our church or maybe sing some songs and then they were gone. But you know what happened today? Six white people came all the way from the United States. And you know what they did? They sat at our table and ate with us. Their hand dipped in the same bowl of ugali as ours. Today is the first time I ever understood that white men and black men can be brothers. That was the miracle he had seen. And it had taken 50 years from the time he saw the first white man before he realized that, before he said we could be brothers. I think when I think of Africa, or I think of the different things that we try and do, that memory comes back to me stronger than probably anything else. Another thing I'd like to do before we start the slides is I can talk about Africa, but what generally happens is I feel that we're a group of white people sitting here talking about some people halfway around the world. And we think, boy, they've got some weird customs. They sure dress strange. Where'd they get those ideas? Something I've done with other groups, and I feel it's the most effective way I've ever been able to talk about the Africans, is to set us in a situation. You are a group of Africans. Let's say we live in some small village. Let's take one that I visited, Oloitokitok. Okay, we're in the Oloitokitok. You are the Africans. We've just had this big, fine meal of ugali and chicken. We sit down, and you're here to listen to me speak. Because I'm an African boy who has been to the United States for 7 months. And I'm here to tell you my impressions of the United States. Those Americans are strange people. They're good people, but they've got a lot of weird customs. I'll try and explain a few things that they're really funny about over there. The main one, of course, is food. There is not a place in the United States that serves ugali. Nowhere. I went to bed hungry every night. And they eat so many different things, you never know what to expect. Here we always know twice a day we're going to have ugali. There's no surprises. America, they even complain if they have the same thing twice in a row. I think they call it leftovers. But we always have ugali. And they have chicken once in a while. But I don't understand them. They waste most of the chicken. They waste the good parts. They throw away the head. They don't eat that. They don't eat the feet. They even throw the intestines and stuff away. But I guess there's so much food around, they don't worry about things like that. And they, you know, they're, most of the time they really seem like clean people. But you know, they eat with both hands. We know that we eat with the right hand, and the left hand is used when you go to the bathroom. None of them seem to get that straight. They use both hands. And another thing I felt bad about is they always use silverware. You know, when we sit for a meal, I know my hands are clean because I've just washed them. I don't know where that silverware's been. I feel it's much cleaner here in Africa. It's much nicer here. Another thing they're funny about is touching. People touching people. It's really bad over there. You know that there's male and female, man and woman, can walk out in public touching each other? But don't try and touch another man if you're a man. I remember the first time I was with my friend and I was going to walk down the street. And you know how we always hold hands when you're walking with your friend? Well, I took his hand. I thought he was going to kill me. I didn't know what happened. Yeah, over there, it's funny, if man touches man or woman touches woman, they never do that, but they always go man with woman. I don't think they're bad people. They just do a lot of things strange. There's I don't know what you would call it, almost like the god of time over there. Everything happens on time. They're always in a hurry and looking at their watch. I remember the first time I went to church. And, well, church starts at 10 o'clock, just like it was here. So by 10 o'clock, I got up and I was ready to start heading over to church. I was walking on the way and I met this other man, and he was really friendly. We talked for quite a while. We had a good time. But I was at church it was just barely after 11 o'clock. And you know what happened? They were leaving. Everybody was walking out. I wondered if somebody got sick or the church was on fire. I don't know. But everybody was leaving. Here, if we make it 11 o'clock, church, I would still be early. Church wouldn't be starting for another 10, 15 minutes. But there, always 1 hour. I learned that by the time I left. And they're even in a hurry at church. They never have a 3.5 hour service like we do here, where we can sing all day long. They're just in a hurry about things. Transportation, I think, is the word they use. Everybody has their own car. They all look so lonely driving down the road with one person in the car. And I went to ride a bus once, and they said it was full. I couldn't get a seat. I looked in there, and it was half empty. Yeah, sure, all the seats were taken, but they only had 2 people in each seat. We know that 4 people fit in the seat, and then by then, you've still got half the room taken. If we can't get 90, 100 people in the bus, we're not even starting to load it up. And they wouldn't let me. I wanted to ride outside like I do here at home when the buses are nice and full. And I can hang on from the outside. They wouldn't allow us to do that. They don't like that. One of the things that bothered me the most about the Americans is something. Well, I was up this place called Holden. And they had this weird day that everybody celebrated, but I think they all must have been miserable. They call it Solitude Day. You know, I think they all hate each other, and they run away and don't see each other. It's the worst thing I could imagine. It's the worst day of my life. There was no one to touch and no one to talk to. You know we don't like to be alone. Even for 5 minutes is too long. But over there, they say they need their solitude. It's another strange thing about those Americans. But they're good people, and they're nice. You've just got to get used to their ways. Okay, I could go on, and there's a lot of different examples like that. I hope that gives you a better view of Africa than it would if I just say, boy, you know, those big earrings and that kind of stuff. Because when we see it from within their culture, or when we look at our own culture as being different, I think it gives us a better picture, an idea of what we see. I'll better start these slides. I think Betty will follow me over here. Can somebody get the lights on that side? I'm not sure where the switch is for that. Okay, to start with, this is the map of Africa. Kenya and Tanzania are these two countries here and here. Kenya is the top one, Tanzania is the bottom. To start off with, I want to give you several slides of what you have probably heard of about East Africa. Does anyone know what this probably is? Mount Kilimanjaro. It's not Ugali. It is the highest mountain in Africa. It's around 19,000 feet. But it's not a steep, it's not a technical climb if you're going to climb Ugali. They take whole classes up there. They just walk on up to the top of the mountain. But it does take about 5 or 6 days. Kilimanjaro is in Tanzania, but most pictures like this one that you see are probably taken from Kenya. So it's very near the border. The border is somewhere up on the side of that mountain. The second or third largest freshwater lake in the world. Do you know the name? Lake Victoria. We were also on that several days. That is on the western border of both Kenya and Tanzania. If you're a tourist and you go to Nairobi, this is a lot of what you would see. People come home with this as their impression of Africa. There's a hand-woven baskets and all that kind of stuff. And I've got a couple at home myself. But a lot of people don't get out of Nairobi other than to the game parks. This is the baobab tree. You may have heard of it, or if you've read the book Little Prince, where he has to walk around on his planet pulling out the baobabs, this is what they end up being, as he can talk about becoming a huge thing. The wood is so soft on these that they claim you could take a gun and shoot completely through it, even though it is 10, 15 feet across. It's known as the upside down tree. They say God got mad, came around, ripped all the trees in, out and stuck them in upside down. And that's what it tends to look like it's a root system sticking up in the air rather than a real tree. There's also the big game, the wildlife. And that was a joy to be able to go see some of these places. We did stop at a couple what they call game reserves, but many of my pictures are just taken down the road. It's a tremendous thrill to come from the United States, a day later be driving down the road and see a giraffe running alongside the road, or zebras go across it, or wild hogs or whatever it may be. We had the elephant, the lions. The lions are pretty scared. I won't say they're not an endangered species, but they aren't. They're much harder to see than the other animals. They stay away from man more than the others would. The giraffes, zebras. This, I'm not sure if you could recognize. Anyone have an idea? It's an anthill, termite mounds. I remember one particular morning running along a road in Pokot area, and the road was almost lined, like every 50 feet, there'd be a 20-foot termite pillar alongside. The previous two pictures were also termite mounds, but of a different type. The wetter areas have rounded termite mounds. The hot, dry areas, the termites build tall pillars like this with a chimney inside. Tremendous engineering involved. They open and close tunnels as needed to keep the air cool. This, they say the inside of a termite mound, the temperature is as regular as a human body. In Africa, most of you have heard of starvation. You've heard the pleas on TV. We didn't see it. But if an African came to the United States, we would probably not take them to Harlem or to the poverty districts that we see here in the United States. And they aren't proud of this. They didn't want to take us out to these areas. I just happened to see this boy one day, and there were no other children around the same way. So I tend to think that this was probably a case of worms or something like that. So I didn't see the starvation, but after we left, it hit much harder because it was a very dry area. A friend of mine wrote to me in August of 1984 and said they had had no rain in the Samburu area where he is at since April of 83. So that had been about 14 months without a drop of rain. They have gotten the rain since then. When Mike wrote to me, he said, the rains are coming now, but now we've got other problems. We've got pneumonia, and we've got the things that are related to that, cholera and other such diseases. Africa, we often picture as the places where they have the big necklaces, and they tend, we still see this when we got in the remote areas like the Pokot district. But though in the cities, they pretty much dress as we do. You've maybe heard of the Maasai tribe. It's probably the most famous of any of the African tribes. Tend to be tall, thin people they usually wear a red cloth wrapped around them. What they're carrying in their hands, I asked them what it was, and they said mkate, which means bread. But it was more of a powder. It wasn't in bread form as we know it, so maybe they add water to it. One of the ways of beauty, like we put on, I won't use that term, many people wear makeup, so they put it on in the morning, take it off at night. These people, rather than doing that, have other ways of beauty, which one of them is stretching their earlobes. They will hang weights on that. The boy on the left side, you see that large wooden piece of wood? That is inside. That goes through his earlobe. That is not hanging on the outside. So the earlobe actually goes around it. Many of them have it stretched enough. I've seen people, particularly in Nairobi, when they're involved in some activity, if their earlobe is flapping around too much, they hang it over the top of their ear, which looks rather funny when you see someone with the top of their ear hanging over. I went over there as part of a Lutheran Youth Encounter, an LYE team, which is headquartered out of Minneapolis. There were five others and myself. And we didn't know each other before the trip. We were each selected individually. We showed up and it was like, here's the five people you're living with for the next year and a half. Which is, it's amazing when I look at these because we were so different. If I would have picked the team, it probably never would have made it a year and a half. Just because everybody would have been like me. We wouldn't have had the wide range. John had no interest in athletics. He claims to have had every low-paying job, including McDonald's and all of those, since he got out of high school. Rhoda is a social worker. Mary in the middle, elementary music teacher. John is an engineering student. Beth was from a farm in North Central Iowa. And her dream came true last year when she married a farmer from Nebraska. We did a lot of programs, churches, schools, whatever. Marty, I'm the one without the guitar in the picture. We spoke, we would give sermons, usually through an interpreter. When we were able to, or if it was a group that understood English very well, we would just use English. By the time, at the end, when we knew Swahili, we could use that. But generally, we had to have someone translate into the local tribal language. We did a lot of eating. Every place you go, as I mentioned the story before, it was important to share food, to break bread. So we would have bread and chai before the meal, or before the program, after the program. One morning I had to preach and they had pumped 8 to 10 cups of tea into me before the service. Now, I think I could handle that, but not when you're hitting a 2.5 or 3 hour service. I had to leave 3 times. Once fairly early in the service, once right before I preached, I had to play it safe. And when I got done preaching, I walked right out the door. I didn't even stop to sit down. Now, you think you'd feel bad about that. The first time, well, they were having this offering. And when you have an offering, you walk up to the front, put your coins in, and then you walk this particular church out the side door and back around and come in the rear door. Well, I searched my pocket. I had to go to the bathroom, so I searched my pockets for some change. I found that, walk up, dip it in, go out, and I was going to take a right turn instead of a left, and I figured I'd be out there by myself. There must have been 100 guys out there behind them. So that's part of life. We did a lot of one-on-one or small group. We used puppets. In Nairobi, we taught the ladies who ran this daycare center how to make puppets. And they loved them. You should have seen them once they got the puppets made. Because they would have the puppets say something, then they'd break out laughing. It's like it had no connection to them. I've got one slide that I didn't bring of this lady who just breaking up laughing, looking at her hand with the puppet on it. It's like someone she had never met. He said that, she said that. But as with any place, I think our favorite times were the times we could sit down and relax with the children. As a Christmas point, that's a poinsettia plant behind there. There were 6, 7, 8 foot poinsettia plants all over the place. And we learned how to wait. It just, you know, time after time, as team leader, I said, you know, if we have a 9 o'clock program, we're going to be there at 9 o'clock, which I still feel was the best policy, but we may have had to wait a long time. But someone was always there at 9, and then we, of course, would have tea or bread or whatever and wait until it was time for the service. We didn't have our own vehicle. We used public transportation as a way to get to know the country, the people, much better. So we'd just been on a bus, which you can see on the tarmac road behind us. Now we were taking a smaller road off to the side. So we're waiting for some vehicle to go by headed that direction. We had some big groups when we would do programs. Quite often we would be assigned to a pastor for maybe 3 days. Well, this pastor has 12 different churches. and we can't get to all 12. Because for one thing, transportation, for another thing, if your message, if your program's going to be worthwhile, you have to have the meals, the tea, this type of thing. So you could maybe get 2 programs in a day. So he would select 4 rather centrally located churches where the other congregations could come. This was a Sunday, so the people weren't working this day, and we had people from about 7 different churches that come to see us. There's probably a 4 or 5 foot aisle in the middle of that mass of people. They sat on each other's laps. They wedged in between. They sat on the altar. We had to step over people to get in front. There was a U-shaped group outside of every door and window, and no PA system. So there's times that quality was kind of sacrificed for loudness. The next picture is one that means a lot to me. We had been in Nairobi for 4 or 5 days. We came out to a rural area in western Kenya, and we'd been there a day or two, and Andy Windler was a missionary there, and he said, we're going to do some programs at marketplaces, because the people are very open to that. They're not in a hurry. They're not there to necessarily go shopping. It's a social event for the week. He said, I'm going to start you off easy. Today there's a very small marketplace that not many people are at on Wednesdays. They usually just come on Saturdays. But there'll be a few people. He said, if you're really lucky, you may have 40 people there. Well, we come to the place. Everyone has some coffee and tea. And they pick that all month and take it in and they get credit for it. We happened to hit the one day of the month when the people were paid. Everyone comes, the money comes in on the matatu or a vehicle, and then all the people were paid for their tea. Well, the matatu was supposed to get there at noon, at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and hadn't arrived. We had around 900 to 1,000 people for our first program. At first, we were standing between 2 trees, and the people were completely around us on the same level. The 2 trees had probably 12 boys in each tree. Finally, we got the truck that we had come in. We climbed up in the back of that and did our program from there. So we were up above the people. I doubt if they could hear in the back. I would like to say that this shows what kind of crowds we commonly gather. You should have seen them when they saw that truck come in with the money. We only had a couple minutes left in our program, and we did that for about 10 people. We met a lot of different missionaries there. This was a theologian from Iceland who has kind of put all his theology training behind him and works with the people in the Pokot area, which was the most remote area we were in. The people wore skin clothing, the large earrings and necklaces. Very little Western influence, which I'm not saying is bad at all. David Simonson, I doubt if you know the name, but you may have heard of Operation Bootstrap. David is the one that founded that. It's a self-help program where they raise money in the United States or Europe, and the money is given to a board in Tanzania. The individual schools in Tanzania send an application in, says we need another classroom. We have this many people attending, or we need to build desks, or we need this. And then the board decides on about 100 programs a year, and the money is given to those. It's African planned, African run, African supervised. The board is more of the money gathering, and then they decide which programs this year will get that, since they don't have enough for all programs. But a tremendous program. Probably the best thing I can say about David Simonson and his witness, he was in Tanzania. It's not like Kenya. There was shortages of food. There was shortages of transportation. There's hardly any gas. It doesn't seem like the ideal place to raise your children. All of David's children are grown. They came back to the United States and went to college. Everyone has returned to Tanzania to work there for their life. Good. Yeah. What's her name? Martin? Eunice. Yes. Okay, the country is about a third Islamic, about a third Christian, and about a third what they call animist or tribal religion. This is a mosque.
there was some almost like Hindu type mosque, and there was the mosque more of the Muslim faith. The churches had every look and appearance that you could imagine. They were built from what the surrounding areas had. This was a small compound. They had a house for the pastor, but his own home was very near there. So he lived at his own home, and we stayed in that particular one. To try and give you an idea quickly of the Africans' need for each other or to be touching people, we spent 2 weeks where we didn't see another white person. When we would go to bed at night, they would slide the table to one side, we'd roll a bamboo mat out on the floor, and we would sleep there. And the Africans, there's probably two or three Africans with us in the room. We would wake up at about 5 a.m. when the chicken next to our head started crowing. The Africans would be sitting there smiling at us. And they were with us the entire time until we were ready to go to bed. And then they stayed with us. So we never had any time alone. Never solitude, just constant, 2 weeks, 24 hours a day. I don't know, I'd like to believe that that didn't bother me at all. And the other members were complaining. But Mary in particular one morning says, I can't handle this anymore. I've just got to have a little while by myself. So okay, I'll handle that. We were invited to tea, which wasn't an optional thing. We had to go as a group. So we start walking off from the house there. We'd gone about a quarter of a mile when the pastor says, where's Mary? I said, oh, she's just not feeling very good. She's really tired, and she said she'd be fine. So, you know, we'll see her when we get back. And he said, oh, okay, you two go back and stay with Mary so she doesn't have to be alone. And no matter what I said, I couldn't convince them otherwise, because that would be a terrible host. It would be rude. They were punishing Mary like she was being put in solitary confinement for a year if they had left her alone. So Mary ended up with two guests the whole time while we went to tea. Other churches would be built out of, this was an area with a lot of clay in the soil. So they built their church out of that. If you notice in the branch right before you is a church bell. Tremendous resemblance to a wheel off of a car. they just take a piece of iron and pound on that when people should start coming to church. It's like notifying them that it's time to start thinking about it. We met so much spirit among the people. This is one day that we spent. We helped dig the footings and pour cement for a new church that was going up. This was a pastor with the t-shirt, I belong to Jesus. One of the biggest things we saw in the churches was the singing. And they loved actions. They would do a lot of action or movement or dancing with their songs, as a kind of an incorporation of the Western with the Christian songs and also with the African dances and beliefs and that type of thing also intermingled with it. We were at one church that has 5 completely separate choirs, and they were all there the same day. They invited us to a choir rehearsal, and we would sing a song, then each of them would sing a song, then we'd sing another one, and so on. We were at a church service one morning where I just wanted to keep track so I wasn't imagining things. We had 27 songs during that service. A high point for me is we went to a church. It was the bishop's home church. So he took us out there as where he had gone as a boy. And the church had about 1,200 people that day. It was just a metal Quonset hut. And they had offerings. And everyone comes to the front. They come to the center aisle, walk up and put their money in there. Well, they make pledges at the beginning of the year, and that's given to what we would call the elders or the deacons, would have a record of that. And they try and reach that amount over the course of the year. Not everyone has money. So we were sitting in the front row. We were singing songs during the offering. People brought up chickens. They brought up sugar cane. Carpenters brought chairs. There were some goats and sheep that were left outside. And it just kept coming and coming with 1,200 people. You can imagine the procession and seeing people bring their gifts to God. After the service was over, it's hard to put a goat in the collection plate. So after it's over, everybody goes outside and they have a big auction. The people that, they can do their shopping after church. And then once it's sold, they take the name tag, they mark down the amount of money that was, and the people get credit on their pledge for that amount. And everybody's favorite part, we're getting to the food. The nearest thing is a mixture of corn and beans. And I can't remember the name they use for that. The white, of course, everybody is ugali. And the green is what they call sukuma wiki, which is a type of vegetable spinach-like thing that we would eat. Sukuma means to push, and wiki means weak. So it's a thing that'll push you through the week because they don't have meat that often. We had a variety of other things. Here we're eating coconuts. And the bananas, which you see, look very green, but they're ripe. We had at least a dozen different types of bananas. My favorite are probably 3 inches long, a little, very sweet banana. And we would buy bunches of bananas for like a dozen for 5 cents or whatever it would be. And they also have a separate kind called cooking bananas, which are a much harder one. And it tastes very much like potatoes. Like boiled potatoes when they're done. I thought I'd just try it once and see what they taste like. So I ate one that hadn't been cooked just to try it. It was like taking a piece of chalk and chewing on that. But yet they were more than edible once they were cooked. We see a lot more goats there than we do here for sure. I think we were involved in 3 different goat roasts. A couple were for our honor. And we attended another one for a missionary that was returning to Germany, where they would roast the whole goat. The one day, they had cooked the goat. We were sitting in this side room of the church. They set the whole leg on the table. And one guy stands there with a knife and cuts off pieces of meat. And we just sit around the table and grab the meat as it comes off and eat it that way. Very good. The taste is somewhere between lamb and beef. Some other areas, we would eat a lot of fish. They're drying their fish. They take a stick, split it down the middle, set all the fish in there, and tie the tops of the stick back together, and then lean it over the fire. They keep turning those as they dry them. This is in a pastor's home where I had stayed overnight. It was a mud hut. And it was a night that we split up, and we all went to different homes. And here I'm in the kitchen. You can see them working over the stove. A stove is always 3 stones. There's riddles about the 3 stones. In fact, when you get married, that's one of the first things you do is you get your own set of 3 stones that you cook on. They wedge your ugali pan down in there because they need both hands to stir. And you can see a nice piece of ugali there in the front. We didn't always eat at home. When we were at Chepararia, which is this small area in Western Pocat, we got to go out to this fancy restaurant one day at the marketplace. There was 8 of us. So we had to split up into 2 groups of 4 because there was no restaurant big enough. All 4 of us sat down and they ran to a store next door or one of the restaurants next door to get more plates and silverware. But again, they would cook the same way as they would at home with the 3 stones. And here they had some ugali as the white, some meat and bean combination, and a breaka or pitcher of tea in the front. The chicken is the honored meat. Whenever you have guests, special guests, you will kill the chicken. For those of you that were at Hunger Awareness Night, I mentioned this. And as I mentioned, their time frame is so different. So if you say, why don't you come over for supper tonight at 6 o'clock? You don't know when they're going to be there. Maybe 9 o'clock. Maybe they won't show. The Africans are very friendly people, and they don't want to offend anyone. So their idea of not offending is they will never tell you no. Can you come for dinner tonight? Yes. And they never show up because they had something else that they're all already committed to. But they won't tell you no because that would be offending you. But another reason is that is not a problem is they don't start fixing the meal until the people are there. As I mentioned, we would get to a place, the other guests would arrive, we would hear the chicken start to squawk. Supper was starting to be prepared. You can see that lovely roll of ugali down the middle. Ugali is cornmeal mixed in boiling water. And you can see the plates in the middle. As again, those of you that were at Hunger Awareness know all the etiquette. You use your right hand, you reach into the the mound of ugali near you, and you roll it into a ball, then you dip that in your supu, which would be like the, technically it's the grease that the chicken was boiled in, and water. And that helps it slide down. And we had some other meat. This was a big celebration that day. As when we were first there, I think I may have mentioned this that night also, is we had a problem. Mary, the one there with the sleeveless dress on, I don't think she'll mind if I tell you. Mary's handicapped. She's left-handed. The first meal, she reaches out with her left hand and starts taking the ugali. Everyone else at the table quit eating from that bowl of ugali. We found out later the reason. This is also ugali, but made out of sorghum instead of corn. This is, I had stayed outside and talked with several of the Africans after this. It was a large Saturday afternoon program. The others had gone in and eaten. When I came in to eat, there was two things left. And as team leader, I was usually the honored guest. So they would save the best part for me. If you look in the other bowl, the beak is open toward you. The comb is to the left side of the chicken's head. There was that left, and there was some intestines. I grabbed up a handful of intestines as quick as I could. That was cut up into probably like 1-inch pieces, the intestines. And I put a piece of that in my mouth and chewed. And after a minute, I realized my teeth were going to give out before the intestines, so I just swallowed it. It didn't taste bad. It was just like chewing on something that wasn't interested in being digested. The chicken head, this other man, he was honored when I gave that to him. That was quite an honor, and I was glad to do it. When he was done eating, the beak was left. The comb, the skull, everything else was in his stomach. He only left the beak. Now that's using the whole chicken. I don't know what they do with the beak later. Yumba is the African word or Swahili word for home. They start off by building a frame like this. They would have to put some more sticks on the roof going around. They plaster the walls with mud and cow dung. That sounds very bad to you, but I would not live in a house that didn't have cow dung in the walls. In Africa. Oh, let me tell you. It's well, get that straight. If it's just dirt. No Iowa jokes here. My mom seriously questioned that when I brought that tradition home. The dirt, if it's just dirt, it washes away very quickly. The cow dung, when they mix it together, it becomes a very solid, hard substance that will withstand the rains for a long time. They have to repair them probably once a year, but if it was just dirt and mud, it wouldn't last near that long. They do decorations in the floor just like you've seen ceilings where they put the swirls in and that type of stuff. And those homes were as clean, I was going to say as clean as any place I've lived myself. But it's not dirty. They sweep the floors, it's a hard surface, the walls are the same. Here you can see they're kind of repairing the roof. They say that the grass roof could last 10, 15 years. The roof is built such that the smoke from the kitchen inside will leave through the roof. It goes up through the smoke, but rain will not come down in. That also, the smoke gets rid of the insects and makes it last longer. Another place, this is in Nairobi, Mathari Valley. It's about 500,000 people supposedly that live in 3 square miles. Not a single two-story building in the place. This would be the ghetto of Kenya. And we were able to go down in there a couple times. But 93% of the people live in rural areas. This is a typical, in a very dry area, this is the rural scene. One house would belong to the Mzee, the man. There would be one house for each of his wives. One house for the boys over puberty age, or probably 12 and older. Another one for the girls older than that, the younger children live with their mothers until that age. The corrals are made out of thorn branches, and that's where they put their cattle or their sheep or goats at night. A very different picture here. This is a rural area, but where there's a lot of rain and tremendous tea fields and other such property. This is very good farming land. The land is split up between all the male sons. Or obviously the son is going to be male. Between all the male children. Also, property runs up and down the hill, so there's no worry about water rights. You own property from the top of the hill to the bottom. As property is split, they just narrow it down from the sides. I wanted to show you what they do to their ears as far as decoration. You can see how beautiful this is. Our tradition, we look at that and say, how could they? Their tradition, it probably makes as much sense as wearing eyeshadow or anything else. This is an older lady, and you can see where some earrings have torn out. Most of the people dress similar to we do, to what we would. The shirt, the shorts. Many of them are barefoot or would wear sandals. In fact, in 7 months, I never put on a pair of socks over there. I was either barefoot or had flip-flops on. A lot of their clothes is surplus stuff from the United States, Western Europe. They have no idea who Superman is. We saw all kinds of $6 million man t-shirts. And when I traded my clothes at the end, my shirts that had words on the front were probably the most popular of anything. Somewhere over there, there's a boy running around with a Lamar's wrestling shirt on. You know, I hope he never has to explain that. Especially since that one was stolen when I was running on the beach one morning. A lot of different livelihoods. Again, most is rural. This is on Lake Victoria where they're fishing. The name of this place is Galilee. I kept thinking that must be like Galilee because there was a fisherman cleaning their nets, the people herding their cattle nearby. Down at the coast, which is on the Indian Ocean, this is a Malindi, and they do fish, they get their meat from the ocean air. So they have things like stingrays or other large fish like that. This is a Nile perch out of Lake Victoria, 44 pounds. That's quite a meal. There's so much livestock that they're going to have some tanning of hides and to make clothing or to make other leather things as are needed. But again, most is the farming. And this is a very fortunate farmer. He's got two teams of oxen. Most would just have one. I should say many would have one. Most people still do it by hand with a hoe. Once they get their products grown here, you can see everyone selling bananas to a passengers in a bus that's going by or has stopped there. Others would set up little booths every day along main highways and sell their vegetables and fruit in that way. Or most people would still go to the marketplace. 1 day or 2 days a week, everyone comes to the marketplace and brings their produce there. We saw some other things. This is during the dry season in a very dry area. This is the riverbed, and it's all sand, but the water level has dropped 5 feet even below the level of the sand. So they have to dig down there to get the water. So every morning these ladies walk a mile from their village, a mile down, fill up their water jugs, put the jugs on their head, their back, and walk a mile back up carrying those water jugs. Most work is done by hand, and they use what they have. Here she's using some sand to scrub out the pans. As you can see, they don't bother with the outside of the pan. It's always cooked over a fire. It'd be a never-ending battle to try and keep the outside clean. And it doesn't hurt anything anyway. And they're amazing people. Everything is carried on their head. These girls are going to fetch some water from a nearby stream. Got a load of corn that will, of course, be turned into ugali. They can carry anything on their head. I was near a well one day. This lady came down that maybe weighed 90, 95 pounds, fills up a 5 gallon bucket of water. Water is 8 pounds a gallon, so she had 40, 45 pounds, balances it on her head and walks on up the hill. These two big balls are water storage units that are put in the corner of a house. You will fill those up and then you'll have water for several days. They do not have water in them now. At least I can't believe that they did. They're taking these two to market to sell to someone that'd be interested. The boy nearest us is carrying sugar cane. The best thing I've heard about carrying something on their head, Andy Windler, this missionary I'd mentioned before, saw this one day. On the road, a lady was walking down the road. She had a log that was about 10 feet long. And it had just recently been cut, so it wasn't dried out. It hadn't lost its water weight. She had that balanced on her head. She had her baby tied on her back. And she was walking along the road, knitting. This is a very new vehicle. This is a Matatu. Most of the time we were in older vehicles. One day we had to make this trip out to Yamahiraga. And it's a very isolated place. There's not much traffic on the road. We'd taken a bus, we'd walked a mile, got on the off-road, and we began to wait. Probably an hour and a half, and a Matatu comes by going into town. I said, "Are you coming back the same way? Can you pick us up?" "Oh, no problem. Well, six of you, okay, we'll take you." So he goes into town. An hour later or more, he comes back. The Matatu is full. By now, we've been waiting 2.5 hours. And he smiles and waves. And I didn't know what to say because these people needed rides too. No problem. They get most of the people out the back. They get them out of the vehicle and say, "You guys get in." Now, I didn't feel very good about that, but they insisted. We were on a weekend trip. We had two guitars, a lap piano, a puppet suitcase. We had overnight bags. We had six. Each of us had our own sleeping bag. The Africans had corn. They had milk. They had bread. They had sugar cane. They had about anything you could imagine. Well, we get in, and they get back in. We had 23 people in one of these, along with all the produce. And, of course, the first place we get to is a lady that's in the back but up against the cab. So we all get back out again. But that was fine because after half an hour of sitting on a loose wooden bench in the back of one of these, you'd just as soon stand up for a few minutes too. But that trip took us about 3.5 hours to get where we were going. It was one of those highlights of my trip when you look back on it. Some people have mules that they use to carry their corn or produce to the market. A few would have bikes, but the mules actually have better balance. But most people will carry it themselves on their head, taking a bunch of bananas to the market instead. The market is the social event of the week. You come to buy things, you come to sell things, and you come to talk. And they spend practically all day there. It's their time of mingling, of socializing, of getting the news, of everything that happens, I would say, is related to the marketplace. They love bright colors. And they cover their heads. Everybody has these bright colored cloths in their head. I look around and it says 95 degrees. Why do they cover their head? The black head, the black hair absorbs that bright sun. And they're cooler by keeping their heads covered with something lighter that reflects the light. This was just before the big storm hit, which you can see in the back. But it was a day that I spent talking to these two ladies, practicing my Swahili. They were practicing their Swahili either because most of they spoke a tribal language. When either of us got stuck, we asked this probably 10 or 12-year-old boy in the white shirt what the Swahili word was because he knew English, Swahili, and Kiluo. No, it wasn't Luo. Doesn't matter. I can tell you anything and you wouldn't know. No, most of what I'm telling you tonight is true or based on facts as I remember it. They love soccer. That's the number one sport by far. But they don't have the money to buy the soccer balls. So they make soccer balls out of anything they can find. Here they've got some plastic wound up with some string around it. And you'll see 40 boys running around chasing the ball. This one gave us a surprise. We're in a very wooded area. We came around the curve and this fellow was facing us. The top of our Jeep probably comes up to the top of his tusk, to give you an idea. The driver shut off the car and says, "We can't get out of here, just be very quiet." The only sound was my camera clicking a couple times. We could hear him breathing when he went by. I don't know, we didn't stick around to see. We were in areas where elephants had gone through and torn up some trees, and that was just, well, one day we went to this place and there's nobody around, and said, well, where are the people? Said, well, they haven't come down from the hills yet. Well, why? Said, the elephants came through last night. And they know that if the elephant wants to go through the house or whatever, it will, so they just stay clear. It's a very weak, it's the smallest thing they have that's considered a telephoto. It's a 135 millimeter. So it's fairly close. Zebras look like such a gaudy animal to me. I mean, I think they're beautiful, but the stripes are so gaudy, but yet they say it camouflages them. Now, I would never believe this if I hadn't seen it. Look at that background. Those zebras there are just about disappearing because of the stripes. The darker animals are the wildebeest, which being all one color stand out much more.